KHUM is freeform independent radio from Humboldt County, California. Learn more at khum.com.
Happy trails to you.
All righty, ladies and gentlemen, it is time once again for another edition of Happy Trails as we keep our eyes on the prize, a regional trail system all throughout Humboldt County. And we got some a really cool trail that several people have checked out. We're talking about the Bigfoot Trail, and Emily Sinkhorn and Aaron Kelly both came back from a big trek there. We also have Michael Kaufman, who's intimately involved in the Bigfoot Trail as well, all here in the KHUM studio. And Emily, of course, you're joining us via telephone, right?
Of course.
Yes.
I miss being in the studio, though.
Well, it's okay. We can make it work. We can certainly make it work. Thank you all for coming in.
Of course.
Yeah, thanks for having
us.
Yeah,
this is very, very cool. So, Emily, you were out there for, what, a month?
Yes, we were out there for about a month. And also just really want to thank all the great new Happy Trails co-hosts for filling in during that time, including Michael here. Aaron and I had been planning this for a little bit, and just really wanted to enjoy the amazing plant diversity and amazing views and amazing wildernesses just in the backyard of Humboldt in the Klamath Mountains.
So I'll throw this to any of you, for those who are not familiar with the Bigfoot Trail. Where does it go from where to where and everywhere in between?
Hey, tell us about your trip. What route did y'all pick?
So we went from north to south because the trail can go from south to north and north to south, but we started up in Crescent City and went into the Siskiyou Wilderness and then kind of followed through from, the Red Buttes Wilderness down to the Marbles, Russians, Trinities, all the way down to the Yolabolies, to the Ides Cove entrance, which is really in the middle of nowhere. So when you go north to south, you kind of go from a town to middle of nowhere trailhead. If you go south to north, you go from middle of nowhere trailhead to a town. So it's kind of how you want to do it. Ending in the middle of nowhere was kind of interesting. You know, we were really stoked.
Did you loop back or what?
No, we got picked up.
You got picked up. Okay.
Oh yeah,
by helicopter.
Looping back would have been quite a mission. I mean, it took us 27 days, and we actually skipped one of the road sections. So, uh-huh. I mean, it was a long, long trek. But
how many miles did you go?
I'm not totally sure. About 300. Emily, do you
know? Woo!
I think about 300. We need to do the math all together and see what it actually was.
Wow. Yeah, that is cool. I know that my iPhone will keep track of how many miles I walk. Obviously, if you keep your phone with you, there's absolutely no cell service out there. But I think it works. I think it works with the GPS. So I think that does the trick.
Yeah. Well, it's fun to be talking about the Bigfoot Trail after last week and hearing about Kevin Hoover's trek on the Pacific Crest Trail. And, and really, I really see the Bigfoot Trail as a great opportunity for people, no matter where you live, but especially on the North Coast, for you get to have a month-long experience or hiking it section by section and get to see some great places and also a lot of places that people don't go to. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciated that we didn't see very many people on many sections of
the
trail.
Which contrasts with what Kevin Hoover was talking about on the Pacific Crest Trail. He said he saw lots of people along there. The longest he ever went was maybe 5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Without seeing anyone.
No, we went, I think the longest we went was probably 5 or 6 days going into.
Wow.
Maybe. I mean, the Siskiyou Wilderness was incredibly remote, and parts that we were going through were unmaintained, really difficult to pass through at points. But what the benefit was that we really didn't see people for days on end. And even in the Trinities, there were parts where we didn't see people for several days because you go through places that just are really kind of lonely and isolated. And that's part of the amazing, that's one of the most amazing things about the Bigfoot Trail is that, you really find places that you just wouldn't chance upon.
Fantastic.
And part of the reason is it's a little bit hard to follow. So why don't you tell us about the trail conditions out there? Like, how did you feel navigating it and what might some things be that we need to work on as the Bigfoot Trail lines?
Yeah, well, fortunately, the as I think we've talked about on Happy Trails before, there is work going on in the Siskiyou Wilderness along the Kelsey Trail. But that, for us, was definitely the most difficult since the trail had not been maintained in many, many years. And unfortunately, because of the Bigfoot Trail Alliance and Michael, we had great maps and knew this ahead of time. But that was certainly the most challenging for navigating. And there was a whole diversity of trail conditions because we were along the Pacific Crest Trail for about 40 miles, and mm-hmm. that felt like a highway. It was so well maintained. And then there were other sections where we'd lose the trail in meadows, in the Trinities. So there's definitely a couple other sections in some of the lesser visited areas of the Trinities.
So the Bigfoot Trail is not we wouldn't say it is fully developed at this point.
Well, it's fully walkable if you're up for an adventure like Aaron and Emily were. But yeah, we're still working on agreements with the Forest Service to have it formally recognized. Yeah.
Cool.
So it's a connection of existing routes, some of which, like Emily said, haven't been maintained in a really long time. So that's part of the reason that I have this vision is because if we don't use the trails, we're going to lose them. So I want to make sure that they're rebuilt in some cases.
And, you know, Emily and I started planning in about November, and we really did a lot of just staring at maps, but we also got a GPS track from Michael. And so in some, you know, we weren't going to get completely lost.
Right.
At some points, yeah. At some points, it was hard to find the trail. It was difficult to walk through, you know, like walls of Manzanita and Ceanothus. But the trail, we knew kind of where we were going at all times. And we had great maps in the places where the trails were really, you know, deteriorated. So I think with some planning, I mean, it's totally possible to do it. It just means you have to be a little bit more determined, and you can't plan on going super long distances, because at times you're going to have to be, you know, crawling over logs and sort of negotiating more difficult terrain. But, you know, you can do it. I mean, if you're up for a big adventure.
So would you say this is an experienced-only trek? Or really determined?
I think you should have a pretty good sense of direction and be able to read a map and
have
a compass. And, yeah, you know, that's something that I'm not very good at. But, yeah, it seems like that's a good thing to have.
Because it's not like a trail that you walk along. It's very finely defined, mm-hmm. Maintained with arrows and saying
right.
this many miles to this place and blah, blah,
yeah.
blah. It's not like that yet.
And in fact, it was amazing to see things like little signs of humanity for me were a big comfort at times.
Like,
you know,
we're on Earth.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really excited sometimes when we'd lose the trail and suddenly you'd see a sign or something. And Emily and I, every time we saw a sign, we would go and read it, even if we knew what it was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like I have gotten lost temporarily in the McKay tract. So.
Sure.
You know, luckily, you can't get that lost there. I mean, you'll eventually find humanity. But it must be kind of interesting when you're out there in the middle of nowhere and you kind of lose the trail and you go, I'm sure it's around here somewhere, and you find it.
So you all were out for a month. Tell us about a typical day on the trail. What did you do? How many miles did you walk?
Yeah, well, I have to say one of my favorite things was just the routine of your job for the day is hiking for 9 hours, or, you know, I think that's pretty great to get to have that time for that. So I think we would typically, jumping ahead, a lot of people ask, oh, I bet the stars were amazing. But we didn't really see very many of those because we were usually in the tent by like 8:30 and having an early wake up. But the routines of making breakfast and making coffee were a great morning ritual, of course.
Oh, always. So you sent me a picture of you guys out there, and it's beautiful. It's really just crystal clear and beautiful. The sky is deep blue. Where exactly was that picture you sent me?
Yeah, that is in the Marble Mountain wilderness. And
gorgeous it's area.
Up when we were heading up towards Marble Gap from Marble Valley, we took a little side trip to get closer to the top of Marble Mountain, and it was amazing. I mean, just the diversity of rock type and plants were amazing, as we knew they would be along the whole trail.
Did you see the caves up there? Any caves?
Guess we didn't poke around enough.
Yeah, there's a extensive cave system in that marble. It's a pretty wild place up there. So something to get back to.
Yeah, certainly.
There was snow on the way up to Marble Gap, which was
there?
Kind of
snow,
fun. Uh-huh. Yeah, a little bit of skiing on the way down.
Nice. You had a little bit of snow walking out there, right?
How high did you
get? We had a couple days.
Yeah.
How high up was your highest elevation?
Just over 7,000 feet.
Yeah. Yeah, the trail ends at about 76. And then in the Trinities, the high point is just under 8,000.
So, wow.
Yeah.
So you got some elevation change going.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not like Sierra Nevada high, right. But, you know, it gets pretty high.
Yeah. The north-facing slopes still had some snow. And so that was another reason that the GPS was really nice. You know, every once in a while you'd lose the trail because it was under snow. And it was good to know that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I have hiked in the High Sierra, and I noticed that, you know, even though if I was in good shape, I'd start getting winded very easily because the air was much thinner. And what about up there? Is 7,000 or 8,000 feet enough to make you get a little more winded than you normally do?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the time we were up at higher elevations, I mean, we were in pretty good shape. So if you start in Crescent City, you actually start at a lower elevation and
right.
You kind of work your way up. If you start in the south end, you start at a higher elevation. But yeah, I think that you could feel that.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. If you go south to north, you actually have to climb about 7,000 fewer feet. But you all had to do 7,000 more feet of climbing. Yeah.
Congratulations.
That's true.
And then so you had that 3-day stretch where you're getting snowed and rained on too, and we had a few storms on the coast here. So that was probably pretty exciting.
It was. And we were joined by a friend, and she did an amazing job. Gabrielle joined us for 4 days. It was her first backpacking trip, and it just proceeded to rain on us. It was freezing at night. It snowed one night. And, you know, she was trucking through snow in the worst conditions. But, you know, it was beautiful. It was in the Trinities. So it was amazing to look around. But certainly, you know, conditions can change at any point in the Trinities. And you can get snow all months of the year, I think, at high elevations in there.
Absolutely. So for all the folks who are listening to this right now, and I know there's some people who are getting turned on by this and want to take it on, what do they do? Where do they get maps? How do they figure out to plan one of these trips?
Yeah, so we have, I think, a pretty good website, bigfoottrail.org. You just Google Bigfoot Trail, you'll find it. We have several different options, map sets you can download for your tablets, hard copy map sets. If you become a member of the Bigfoot Trail Alliance, the incentive is the GPS track for your device. So, and then you know, we've got tons of free stuff just to read about. We've got links to, we should put this up on K-Hum too, but we've got a link to the blog that Aaron and Emily are putting together from their adventure. So, there's endless resources, I think. Everything available. We even have a forum for discussing trail conditions or questions about what maps to bring, et cetera, on the Bigfoot Trail website. So
fantastic. And what do you suggest people bring with them?
Ha, that's a good question for Aaron and Emily. What did y'all bring? Excuse me.
Well, I used hiking poles for the first time, and I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd always thought they were just kind of for, like, my dad. But, I mean, they were so great for your knees. And
it was like for skiing, right?
Yeah, but they're really lightweight.
Right.
And, yeah.
It's great for downhill.
For uphill, too.
So what are they for? I mean, I've seen them before. I've never used them. They're for your knees?
They even keep your rhythm, kind of. And yeah, they take pressure off your knees. And going uphill, they take some pressure off your back and your quads.
Nice.
I mean, Emily and I kind of joked that we would just walk around all the time with them now, you know, because they kind of set a pace for you. You're using your arms a little bit. You get your, yeah, I thought that was the greatest thing to learn about.
And so you shared a tent, obviously, and then would you bring about a 20-degree bag or sleeping bag?
I did. Yeah. Emily, what was your bag?
I think mine was 20 degrees as well, but that was always a misnomer.
Yeah. And then we tried really hard to get down to about 30 pounds with water and food, so we just kind of brought minimal clothes, and we even ditched some of our clothes along the way. I mean, you know, just trying to get as lightweight as possible. Our stove was lightweight and our water filter.
Mm-hmm. Did you bring a jet boil or something? Stove? Or?
We brought an alcohol... alcohol stove.
Yeah.
So really small, just don't have no little moving parts or anything.
Yeah.
So that worked great.
And how much water did you carry? Say what was the maximum you'd have to carry for water?
Well, I do think we were really fortunate in hiking in a relatively wet year early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we usually had like a Camelback and one other water bottle filled. But water,
so 2.5 liters.
Yeah,
water was never really a concern.
Good.
For one long road walk up from the South Fork Trinity to the Old Bullies, we really packed a lot of water.
Let me ask you this regarding water. I know that a lot of streams have issues with Giardia and whatnot. Are the streams there? Can you just take the water right out of there? Or do you have to treat it?
Well, we used a Sawyer water filter, which is just a lightweight water filter, but
I haven't treated my water anywhere since about 2000.
So if you're made of
but
iron.
That's not a story for now. That's my wife thinks I'm crazy. And...
Well, I remember, you know, when I used to go backpacking when I was younger, no one ever treated water. It was just, you just drank out of the stream. It was just,
right.
But it's become an issue.
Yeah.
So perhaps, Michael says maybe. Michael says Michael does it.
With an iron gut, you can do anything.
Gut,
you
know? Try it, but beware,
yeah.
I guess.
It's a good idea to treat.
Probably a good idea. And what do you use, just a filter?
Yeah, we had a Sawyer water filter, which is a very lightweight one. I mean, I would recommend just looking on blogs for lightweight camping gear. That was a big part of preparing, was getting everything down to just the lightest weight we could possibly get it. I mean, our tent was very lightweight. And, you know, little things that you don't need, you just start getting rid of. We weighed everything down to the last ounce.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it really paid off because it felt great to not have much weight on your back.
Fantastic. And you listed... everything you brought on your blog, right?
That's right. Our blog has a list of everything we brought.
Isn't it nice when you can just make a list of everything that you own, and it's not that long?
Yeah,
keeps life real simple.
It does. So we are pretty much out of time. So is there anything you guys want to touch on before we wrap?
Yeah, I've got one. Oh, go ahead, Emily.
I just wanted to emphasize that it's not very often that you get the opportunity to go for a month long. Block or longer, but the great thing about the Bigfoot Trail and living on the North Coast is there's a lot of great resources to be able to hike it in sections and really enjoy each of the wilderness areas, and so it doesn't have to be a whole hike it, you know, through hike. It's a great, you know, weekend opportunities as well.
And you had friends meet you in those areas, so that makes it even more fun, right?
Yeah, each of our resupplies was kind of a little party. And
that was awesome.
It was great.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Cool.
Fantastic. All right. Anyone got anything to add?
Okay, since there's 32 conifer species along the route, I have to ask, how many conifers were you able to find on the scavenger hunt?
So we found 30.
Nice work.
Wow.
Yeah,
well, we shot by two. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of them that you didn't find is pretty tough.
Off trail, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so we were happy with that.
Well done.
Good job. Good job. All righty. Well, thank you all for coming in. And Emily, thanks for joining us via telephone.
Yeah.
All righty. In this conversation on Happy Trails, you will find podcasts shortly at iTunes and at khum.com. Just look for Happy Trails.
Happy Trails to you.